Girl, what's your name? What you drinking? Yeah, what's your favorite song? If you're thinking what I'm thinking, we ain't gonna be in this bar too long. We'll be sneaking on out to your car, stealing kisses out there in the dark. Yeah, it might be too soon to say I love you, but you're gonna make me want to.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our guest this week is country singer and songwriter Jimmy Allen. This podcast comes from an Instagram Live interview I did with him last week. His three singles are Best Shot, Make Me Want To, and This Is Us. Jimmy is incredibly genuine, and you will hear about his journey from Delaware to Nashville, how he overcame a ton of adversity in his life and his career to make it to where he is today, and much more. Enjoy the show.
Word. How are you, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm on lockdown. Are you down in Nashville now?
Yeah, I'm in Nashville now. I went on my tour bus driver took me up to Delaware a couple weeks ago for a week and a half fishing trip, and I fished every day from about 8 in the morning to about 9 at night.
That's a little better than life on the road. You're not getting to do what you truly love, but hey, make the most of the time. Enjoy the downtime a little bit.
Yeah, dude, gotta do something.
Yeah, no doubt. And you gotta make the most of the time. And for you, you'll probably never have a downtime like this, probably for a long, long time in the industry you're in. So you can enjoy it. Do you know where you were supposed to be tour wise right now?
What day is
it? Today is Thursday, May 7th.
I never know where I'm supposed to be anywhere.
That's funny. Yeah.
If it wasn't with my tour manager, like, I typically find out where we're going, if we're flying, when we land, or when I get my, when I look at my, like, boarding pass on my phone. And typically, like,
that's hilarious.
When we're on the bus, I never know. I just wake
That's
up.
That's funny.
Like, I guess where we're at.
Damn, and then you just go from there.
Yep. You see,
that's awesome.
Meet and greets, interviews. It's pretty much the same thing every day. That's simply why when I get to a city, I try to do something. You know, whether it's, I like to find like hole in the wall diners. That's my thing. Like, the dirtier the diner, the better. Like, I don't want them clean, all nice diners now, man. I want the dirty places. You know, places where people don't go because there's rats. I'm like, look, I like where rats go. Cause like, rats are on the floor. They're not on the ground. Like, well, you need to go somewhere where it's clean. I said, look, if they don't got rats, that means the food's not good because the rats don't even want the food.
Wow.
That's my motto.
Hey, never change, brother. Hey, start off by telling the listeners about where you're from, sports you grew up playing.
So I am from Milton, Delaware, where it all happens. I was playing basketball, soccer, baseball. Played football for a little bit. Didn't like it, so I was done. And then, yeah, just more basketball, football. More like, not, I mean, basketball, baseball, soccer. It's kind of my thing.
That's cool. You're from Delaware. No pro sports teams in Delaware. Who are your favorite sports teams?
Well, I'm an Eagles fan, of course. And then I'm a Lakers fan and a Dodgers fan.
Nice. I can get down with the Lakers. I'm a LeBron guy. So I'm like the fair weather LeBron guy.
Yeah.
Wherever
I'm
he's at.
I'm not really a LeBron fan. I'm a Lakers fan. Now that LeBron plays for the Lakers, I appreciate him. I think I like LeBron the man more than LeBron the player. LeBron
gotcha.
The player, me being a huge Kobe fan, sometimes drives me insane. Because on the court, you know, Kobe was a killer. Like, there wasn't no pass to the open teammate when the game's on the line. No, you in the game. You're the man. You're the best in the world in the game. So,
right.
Yeah, that's the only thing that drives me crazy about LeBron.
Have you been watching The Last Dance?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, listen, that's killer.
That right there should stop all debates about LeBron being better than Jordan. Like, that right there should just kill the conversation. Like, and we were lucky enough to where, you know, we saw, I got to see Jordan's last couple years, saw Kobe's whole career, and we got to see, you know, LeBron. So we can easily be like, yeah, LeBron don't want no smoke when it comes to Jordan, bro. He don't want no problems.
And we're both 34 years old, so we appreciated it, but now getting to watch back, man, I'm loving watching how physical the game was back then, because now they protect the superstars, and it's so much softer of a game. I mean, the Pistons beat up Jordan. Like, no one is beating up LeBron these days.
Listen, bro, it's win by – because everybody buddy-buddy. Like, that's – see, I love that era of basketball, because I'm like, when you're on the court, you're there to win. Like, these dudes wasn't going on summer vacation together, texting during the season. No. They were – it was a war, bro. Like, and that's why and I also felt like the league was a lot more mature then, because guys typically stayed in college 3 years.
Right.
Like, and just about every team had a superstar and a star.
Right.
Even though they couldn't win, like, if it wasn't for the Bulls, Utah Jazz would have won, like, 3 championships.
Right.
Same with the Knicks. Same with the Hornets. I'm not the Hornets, but the Supersonics with, you know, Gary Payton, Hawkins, Detlef Schrempf, Sean Kemp. They had a squad, too. Portland had a squad. Like, that just shows how great Jordan was. Like, guarantee that team, that Utah Jazz team right now in their prime could come right now with their fundamentals and play any team in the NBA and beat them in a 7-game series. I put my money on that.
Yeah, I bet. And the big men are getting phased out nowadays. Like, back then, the big men were big. And now the big men are phased out. What's your favorite pair of Jordans that they've released?
Man, probably I just got a pair of the Concords, and I just got the Jordan 11 Breads that came out.
Yeah, I just got the 11 gray and light blue ones and a golf shoe, and they're dirty.
I finally went and got those fours. I got a pair of the Winterwise fours, those blue ones, dark blue ones, the all black ones. And then those new Jordans that just came out, I got them, but I'm not paying. Those red ones.
Yeah, you got them just to get them.
I was like, and then I didn't get them the first week. Trick is, what most people don't know, is most shoes, the first 2 weeks they come out, regular price. For a week, they drop the price on the third week. That's when I get them, because I'm cheap.
Hey, that's good info. I'm going to get on that, too.
That's when I get them. The third or fourth week, they drop for a little bit.
That's cool.
I got a pair of off-whites, but I didn't know what they were. So I was on Instagram one day, like, cutting my grass, wearing my Jordan 1 off-whites, right? And my DM blew up. People were like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, cutting grass. In off-whites? I said, in what? I didn't know what they were because they came as a gift. To me, they're sneakers.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, you probably are the only one cutting grass in a pair of Jordans nowadays.
Looked at the retail price of them. I was like...
Yeah, you regretted that pretty quick.
Yeah, they were like $1,300. I said, if I'd have known, I'd have just sold them.
Wow. So when did you know you wanted to get into music, and at what point did you decide to move down to Nashville?
Well, for me, ever since I was a kid, I kind of always knew music was my thing, really. So I used to sing in church, play drums in church, piano, got into like musical theater in high school. Was singing. I did the emo stuff for a while. I was in an emo band. We used to rehearse in my buddy's garage. Our band was called Midweek Crisis. We were horrible. but my mom listened to my Christian music, and all my dad listened to was country music. So the older I got, you know, I tried it. I just tried to like blend different genres of music together. You know, I tried R&B for a year. It wasn't my thing. Came to Nashville, tried country in 07, but country was still pretty traditional then. So typically, like, what I do now didn't work. Like, I was too pop for country, but I was too country for pop.
Right.
So I was kind of, like, stuck. So then I was just like, man, I'm going to just do what I do, which is, it's like genre blending, where I take the stories and the lyric of a country song mix it with pop and R&B melodies with a pop rock production. So that's kind of my stuff. That's kind of my thing, kind of what I do.
Yeah, and you got a great sound. How long did it take you to bust it onto the scene in Nashville?
11 years actually before my first song with the radio. So it took 10 years to get a record deal here. Moved here in 07, got a record deal in 2017.
Wow, that's awesome. And I heard you at an acoustic show in Louisville talk about during that time living on couches and whatnot, and that's a period of time that breaks a lot of artists because they're not used to facing adversity in tough times. And if you don't mind sharing the story, you shared it at the show, and you talked about it as a kid, y'all play camp out in the living room, and you were used to persevering and like, and so tell that story.
There was a time when, you know, things weren't good for my family. You know, my parents split up by then. And, you know, my mom had 2 car payments, a house payment, and trying to raise 2 kids on a nurse's salary. And, you know, back then, nurse's salary. So we didn't have electric. But I didn't know because my mom said, hey, y'all, this week what we're going to do is we're going to have a camp out. So we camped out in the living room, like we had a cooler with ice and sandwich meat and had candles and stuff. So during the day, and she knew the electric was going to be cut off. She told us, so that's why she left the garage door open so she could take the van in and out. So during the day, it was the summer. So we'd be outside playing with our friends in the pool, hanging out, like, you know, everything's normal. Then at night, we camped out in the living room. And we thought it was the coolest thing ever. And we didn't know until we got older that we didn't have electric. So just little things like that, man. Kind of just taught me to, you know, not everything is, you know, green grass and sunny skies, you know.
Right.
I feel like when your faith is tested, man, that's when you really find out how bad you want something, you know, because everybody says, oh, I want this, I want this, I want this. But as soon as, you know, you get hit with the obstacle, oh, you got to live in your car for a month, or you're going to have to go 3 days without eating. Like, if somebody would have told me, Jimmy, if you're going to go 3 days without eating or you have to live in your car, I did it. Would I do it again? Yeah. Because for me, it was worth it, you know? Because I'm like, there might be people that, you know, sing better than me, look better than me, whatever, be more talented. But I said, they're not going to outwork me. Because I said, while people sitting here asleep in their bed, comfortable, I was up every day, 4:30 a.m. at the gym, working out, just trying to get my physical to align with my mental. Because I've always felt like I've been pretty mentally tough, but I wanted to make sure my body could keep up with my mind. Because, you know, you can run yourself down. Like,
right.
People have that saying, what's that? I sleep when I'm dead. Hustlers don't sleep. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, your body needs rest, you know, and I'm guilty of it. But it's like trying to drive a car without gas. Eventually, that car is going to stop running. So you got to feed yourself. You know, you got to exercise. You got to drink water. You got to, you know, you have to take care of yourself. So that's kind of just what I was kind of used to doing. Like seeing my mom and my dad. You know, he was in the military. He was a Marine. My brother got drafted by the Mets. So I kind of saw his work ethic. And had a family member that played professional basketball. So I kind of just took all of their lessons that they applied to sports and just applied it to music because it's the same. Like when you hear old folks telling you stories, whatever the subject is, whether it's fishing, sports, whatever, it's bigger than what they're actually talking about.
No doubt. And that's that was such a powerful story. That was a few years ago when I heard you tell that story, and it still stuck with me to this day. And it reminds me a lot of guys I played with, myself included. Like, I burned the ships when I tried to play football. Like, you got to burn the ships and say, I'm all in, and no matter what, I'm going to go. And if you have a backup plan, if there's a way out for you, you won't make it, because there's so many people in Nashville trying to cut it. There's so many people trying to get into the NFL. And, yep. and on a year-to-year basis, there's always someone to try and take your job. There's always someone moving to Nashville. You're always competing. And so the people that I saw that were so successful at the next level were always the guys that didn't have a backup plan. It wasn't like, oh, well, if this doesn't work out, I got my dad's business, I can just go run. Or if this doesn't go work out, I got – you know, a trust fund. No, yeah, the dudes that made it were the fighters.
Because that's what my grandma used to always say. It's impossible to put 100% into two different things. You can't, like, I remember I got in trouble in middle school with my teacher because she was like, so Jimmy, what are you going to be when you grow up? I was like, I'll be a singer. She was like, well, that's far-fetched. What if that don't work out? I said, it is. It's going to work out. She said, well, what's your backup plan? I said, let me ask you something. Did you have a backup plan? She said, no. I'm going to be a teacher. I said, just because you get your degree don't mean somebody's going to hire you. She said, well, what you want to do, music and movies, that's far-fetched. I was like, do you listen to music? She said, yeah. I said, do you watch movies? She said, yeah. I said, those people come from somewhere.
Right.
Like, you just got to work at it, man. It's for me, there's never been no other option. Like, yeah, you know, since I had a son, like my son will be 6 this year. As a father, I had to work whatever job I had to make sure – you know, he had food and clothes. Like, your children should never suffer because you're chasing a dream. Never. You know, there should never be something my son wanted that I couldn't get him. There should never, you know what I mean? Like, because right. I don't got enough money. No, just get another job. And what I did was I would work, I would write songs in the morning. Then I'd work at Bonefish Grill from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Then there was a couple times a week where I would, you know, work overnight. Whether it was Walmart, you know, it was time I was a janitor at a middle school. I collected cans for a while just to make extra money. Like, you got to do what you have to as a parent, you know, and you can still pursue your dreams. And people say, well, how do you know? Like, well, I did it. It's not easy.
Right.
You know, it wasn't easy at all, but I can honestly say it was worth it. And even though I'm just now starting to get, you know, a number one record, another number one record and stuff, I've always felt successful because I feel like success is an internal thing. To me, success isn't measured by how much money is in your bank account, how much people know you. To me, success is waking up every day doing what you love. Even though I had another job, I still was singing at night in different places. So singing is what I love to do, and I got to do that. I still could do the physical act of singing, you know, and all the extra stuff just came later.
That's cool, man. And that's such a testament. So would your advice to young guys in the music profession, or really in any profession, but the music profession especially, like, be yourself. Like, don't try and be someone you're not. Be yourself and just get ready to grind.
Yeah, man. Be yourself. Whatever kind of music you want to do, move to where that style of music is prominent. Like, introduce yourself to people. It's a mix between working on your craft, networking, and just finding ways to be creative. It's all about just showing up. Like, I gave somebody an example. I said, say you want to sign with a record label or a publisher or a manager, right? These people have thousands of people emailing them weekly. But what happens is people that don't want it after not getting responses to emails fade away. So you email, you have a publisher's email or something, email them at least once every other week with new show updates and new music. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Because I guarantee you, by the 20th email you send them, they will respond. But they got to kind of weed out who wants it and who doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen.
Yeah.
There's been so many people that moved to town the same time as me, and I'm the only one still here.
Wow.
There's been people that came and, like, I'm giving up on Nashville. I've been here 2 years. I was like, 2 years?
It wasn't a dream.
Know anybody.
Yeah, that wasn't a real dream then.
Nah, man. And I was lucky enough to, before I got my deal, you know, I'm friends with a few NFL players that played, like, Jason McCourty, Cortland Finnegan, Chris Hope, those guys. We would all work out at the same gym. And I would work out with them. You know, we'd go to lunch. They'd buy me lunch because I was broke driving this minivan with two doors on it that didn't work. And I just saw their work ethic. You know what I mean? Like, Because to make it to the NFL, then to get a starting job in NFL, then to, like, it's just, there's different layers of commitment, you know? And I'm like, man, if I can apply this to music, like, that would be just crazy. Somebody said, how did I get discovered? Oh, my boy Dom's on here. What up, Dom? Bambino. A quote my dad, I'm a quote person. I quote a lot of dead people, like my dad and my grandma and stuff. that was a dark joke. That was dark. Whatever.
There's a lot of wisdom out there, though.
Oh, yeah. So, my dad used to always say, always make yourself available. Because you never know when your opportunity is going to come. Like, I'm thinking somebody's going to see me playing at one of my shows downtown Nashville at the Honky Tonk Clubs, stuff like that. Nope. My opportunity came because I met this guy that worked at the gym I used to work at, had the same job as me in the snack bar. He introduced me to this producer. The producer calls me and says, hey, I have a songwriter's round next week at Puckett's Grocery Store. It's a grocery store / restaurant / music venue. And you'll make $200, you'll get a free meal, and you get to play some songs. So I was like, I'm in. So I called out on all three of my jobs, and I went. Because I'm like, at least I get to sing, I get to get a free meal, and I make $200. That sounds like a good night to me. But I go there, one of the guys that filled in, because I filled in because somebody else couldn't do it. Then another guy filled in, a guy named Ash Bowers. So Ash Bowers used to be an artist, and then he started a publishing company. He heard me sing, heard the song I play called Back Here Mine. He was like, man, what do you got going on? I was like, nothing. He was like, well, I want to introduce you to some people in town to publish your stuff. I was like, well, tell me about your publishing company. He had a small publishing company at the time. Ended up signing with him. I was able to quit all three of my jobs 3 months after meeting Ash.
Wow.
We got to work writing songs. Ash became my manager, producer, and at the time, it was like he had a small publishing company. He believed in me. I believed in him. And it's been cool to kind of see how it grew. You know, it went from both of us kind of having a little, me having nothing going on and him having a little something going on, to now, as a publisher, you know, we had my single Best Shot with number one, Make Me Want To with number one. He signed Matt Stell that has a song Pray For You. That one number one.
Yeah.
He signed Chris Bandy. So it's like it's been growing, and it started from literally us just meeting at this place called The Row. Me, him, and his lady used to work with us. Amy used to meet at a place called The Row in Nashville and just dream big. You know, we were this small publishing company with, you know, this guy from Jackson, Tennessee that used to be an artist, with this black guy as an artist from Delaware. People probably looking at us not taking it serious, or probably didn't even know we existed. But we just focused on creating music we loved, working hard, and now here we are.
That's so cool. Is there a guy or girl, an artist, mentor that you've had down in Nashville that's helped you out in your career?
Yes. T-Roy from Montgomery Gentry was one of my...
Man.
He gave me so much advice. Him, a guy named Aaron Benward, used to be in a group called Blue County. Rodney Atkins, Brady Seals, used to be a little Texas. I got to meet all of these guys at my gym. I've become real close now with, like, you know, Jake Owen, Darius Rucker, a lot of old, Tim McGraw, Brad Paisley. A lot of guys I grew up listening to. Aaron Tippin was my dad's favorite country artist of all time. They've given me so much advice, whether it's just actually telling me different life stories or just watching them. You know what I mean? And my biggest thing would always tell people, don't look for the world to believe in you when you're chasing a dream. Just find one person. You find one person that believes in you. And for me, that was Ash and his partner with the company, Steve Williams, and Amy. And you know, Ash from day one, when, you know, a few labels and people didn't get what we wanted to do, he could have been like, ah, well, I give up. Nah. He just kept pushing. And, you know, he went from not ever managing an artist to, he was like, look, you do want to meet with managers, you meet a manager. And I was like, you do. Because my thought process is, why do I want to be a small fish on a roster that with big old artists and the managers really focusing on the people that are bringing on money, when I can get with a small manager, we both have something to prove. But we got right. a chip on our shoulder. You know what I mean? The same thing, my thought process with my booking agency. I went with UTA to where UTA on the hip-hop side, rock side, pop side, acting, they're huge. But they were just really starting to get the Nashville country office going. And I was like, that's where I want to go. Because I'm like, all their attention is going to be on me. Because I'm like, as an artist, to a certain extent, you got to be selfish. You have to, you know? And what I loved about Ash and UTA and my label, Broken Bow, that I'm with now, it's they never hit me with, we did this for this artist, we did this for that artist. No, it's all about what can we do for you? Because every artist is different, you know? And so you find people that believe in you, that want to not change you, but help you become a better version of who you already are and who you want to be.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I didn't even make this connection until now. We're both United Talent Agency guys. That's what I work with on the broadcast side of things now. So we both got UTA in our corner. Yeah, yeah, they're powerful, man. It's a powerful company.
Shout out to Jeremy Zimmer in the house.
What's your favorite song that you've cut? I love all your big stuff. Your number ones have been great. I also love All Tractors Ain't Green. That song is powerful. What's your favorite song that you've cut?
My favorite probably be High Life. High Life and 21 are probably my two favorites that I've released already. Just something I just love about those songs. Super nostalgic. High Life reminds me of my dad. 21 reminds me of my small town. Man, I'm super sentimental. So for me, everything that reminds me of my hometown and how I grew up, I'm all about it. You know, I love that little town where I'm from. So I think those two would be my favorites. All Tractors Ain't Green, just the message in that song. Love that song.
Going back a second, you were talking about anything about your hometown reminded me of the Montgomery Gentry song, My Town. And I got to spend a lot of time with the Montgomery Gentry guys. And Bo Garrett says hi. I talked to him yesterday.
Bo's
the man. And I was actually at the Kentucky Derby with Troy the year before he passed. I mean, such a tragic, tragic deal. But and I know those guys are still hurting. You know, they tried to play without him, and it just didn't feel right. And Bo kind of moved on and all that. Tough, tough deal. But, man, those dudes were so cool and so much fun to hang out with. Man, had some great connections. And I love to hear that you have connected with them as well, and Troy especially. Moving on a little bit. So this month is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and you've been open on other podcasts that I've heard you on talk about your issues with bipolar in the past and how you were diagnosed with that as a kid. But what advice do you have for people that are struggling with mental health issues in this current COVID-19 time? Because this is a tough time for so many people, especially people with mental health issues.
Yeah, so I talked about it a little bit ago with People Magazine a week or so ago about how when I flew back from Germany when all this started, you know, I was cool the first 2 weeks, and then it just hit me because I stopped taking medication because my medication became music and touring and traveling and always kind of staying busy. And recently, you know, it's been, you know, rough to where the mood swings hit again and all those thoughts and things that depression that comes with it. I would just tell people, you know, talk about it, you know, seek help. You know, there's tons of people out there that want to help you. And that's why I try not to be silent about it, because a lot of times people can feel like they're on their own. I used to feel like that. You know, there's a country artist, you know, I won't name that person, but this artist has bipolar as well and doesn't speak out about it, but we talk about it a lot together. But just letting people know that you're not the only ones going through it can kind of help ease the pains where they can say, all right, if this person's getting through it, they're getting through it. What helps? So for me, what helps is, you know, writing, working out, TV. I love TV, video games. I'm not much of a reader, because if I read more than a paragraph, I get a headache. So I do audiobooks sometimes, but the crazy thing is, you know, I've music a lot of times. Like, I just go upstairs in my little studio area and just like blast music. I listen during those times, man. I listen to a lot of, I take it old school, man. Old school R&B, old school gospel I grew up on, like Fred Hammond, Kirk Franklin. Man, I get into Hillsong. I guess I tell people, focus on what makes you happy and embellish it. Like, if you can think when you're the happiest, focus on doing that times 10 and talk about it. Because I know for me, as a, you know, as men, a lot of times we don't really want to talk about certain things, especially mental illness.
Right.
But when you can see how, if you don't take care of yourself, that can affect the people around you. So for me, wanting to be healthy, you know, for my fiance and my daughter and my son, who's like totally knocked out sleep right now.
That's hilarious.
With the fishing poles next to his head. Yeah, just trying to find a purpose. Purpose is big with everything. Find your purpose. What you want to work towards, what drives you, and then focus on what makes you happy. And I think if you focus on those two things, it'll help slowly pull you out. And especially when you let people around you know you're not doing well, you know. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with people, because a lot of people ask you, hey, how you feeling? Oh, I'm good. Lying. Just be like, not good. What's wrong? Boom. And just get it out, you know. That's kind of how I would address that.
Absolutely. And that's powerful stuff. You've mentioned a few times being into working out. What's your workout routine like nowadays?
My workout routine, pretty much this. when I do work out, I like to get to the gym. I'll jump rope for about 15 minutes. I get that. I don't know what it's called, but I call it the half moon stabilizer thing. I'll do three sets of 15 push-ups and then 20 ab rollouts. 15 push-ups, 20 ab rollouts. Then I'll jump to, when it's chest day, jump to the bench press machine. And I put 45s on each side. But when I bench press, I lift my legs up so I can get lower abs at the same time. Do three sets of 15 with that. Run over, triceps, run back, do another set of that, jump rope in between, and then I'm done. I typically work out for about 35 minutes, and I hit a hard 35 minutes. You know, I feel like I can do a hard 35 minutes, or I can sit there and do what most people do, BS for like 2 hours. So I just get in, hit it hard, go. Leg day, I don't like the squat rack. It feels weird on my back. So I like to do a lot of those machines for like my quads, my hammies, my calves, with jump rope and some core. Then I get out of there.
That's cool. Yeah, my workouts have changed dramatically since I've been done playing. And now that all the gyms are closed and everything, I got some weights at the house, but it's hard to stay motivated to do weights and stuff. So now I'm finding myself competing with all these dudes on Peloton, and I'll be getting into that. It's just something to compete, you know, with people on. So I'll be getting into those and having some fun with that. I can't imagine a few years ago you'd have said I'd been doing cycling races against people, but I guess that's where I'm at in life.
Hey, listen, I used to love the elliptical. But Cortland Finnegan, and I was like, man, no man should ever be on the elliptical unless you're nursing some sort of new injury, because you're just sitting there just swinging. And he said, if you're under the age of 50 and don't have a knee injury, man, get on the track or get on the treadmill. I used to get on the elliptical, and they just look at me like,
that's funny.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
That is funny. Hey, so I see you and your son and your fiance crushing these Disney trips, and we've been doing some Disney trips. We have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I think you're probably on the same page as me, especially earlier when you're talking about providing for your kids and wanting to give them stuff. Like for me and my wife, people always give us crap like, oh, your kids aren't going to remember that trip. I'm like, yeah, but it makes them happy, and we're making memories, and we're taking pictures, and we have the means to do it, and we like doing it. So I wanted my daughter to come on and ask you some questions about Disney, but she's chickening out right now. So I'll ask her for you. I'll ask you for her. Who's your favorite Disney princess?
My favorite Disney princess, Belle.
All right. What's your favorite Disney movie?
Mary Poppins.
Ooh.
Old school.
Yeah, that is old school. I don't know what mine is, man. We've been on a bad Frozen kick at the house lately. We're finally getting into Cars. My 2-year-old son, he never gets to pick the movie. So now we're getting into Cars. That's a little bit cooler in the house. And then in Epcot, what's your favorite country to drink at?
Man, England. I go to Rose and Crown and really get after it.
Yep, that's if you do the around the world, we go left to right. We go clockwise. So by the time we get to England, we're usually pretty well off by then. But England's solid.
And the crazy thing is, I meet people every year at Disney, at Rose and Crown, and we just like hang out. So like, I met this family like 3 years ago there. So like, when I'm close to where they're at, they'll come to the shows, hang out. We all go to Disney together. We spent Christmas and New Year's at Disney together the last 2 years. It's super cool, man. What's your favorite ride at Disney?
My favorite ride at Disney, man, I went as a kid, and then lately we've been doing a bunch of little kid stuff, but we did get to do some adult rides. We went down last year when University of Louisville played against Alabama in a football game last year, and we did that rock and roller coaster, the one at MGM that like flies. That sucker's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I love that you still call it MGM. I can tell you old school.
Oh, what's it now?
Hollywood Studios.
That is,
you probably still call Disney Springs Downtown Disney, or what did it used to be called?
Right, Downtown Disney. That's what I knew it as.
That's what I call it. It used to be called something else before that, like forgot what it is. My favorite ride, I'm a classic Disney fan, don't laugh, Carousel of Progress.
Nice. Yeah, my daughter loves the carousel. We wore that out, and then, man, we'll do that It's a Small World on repeat.
Have you introduced her to Carousel of Progress?
I don't. Which park is that at? Is that at Disney? So
that's at Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, that's what I mean, at Magic Kingdom.
But it's in Tomorrowland. It's in Tomorrowland. He's sleeping. It's in Tomorrowland over by Buzz Lightyear.
Gotcha. I don't know that we've done the carousel over there. We'll have to knock that out. We were supposed to go to Disney World right when this quarantine stuff started, and we missed out on that trip. So we'll have to knock that out the next time.
Yeah, we should plan and just go down there together. So like, we're such responsible people. When they made an announcement about the whole pandemic, so we ended up, we had Naomi, then the tornadoes came in March, like March 6th, March 7th, lost power. I flew, so my fiance and her parents went to Florida, got a house down there. Then I went to Germany, came back, they were still in Florida. And I found out they were closing Disney like 3 days. So we just went to Disney for like 3 days.
That's awesome. Yeah, we missed our trip. My daughter was supposed to give up her binky, her pacifier. She was going to give it to Cinderella. And we got that trip canceled. So I owe her one. But each week on the show, on the podcast, we'll do some recurring questions. And these are fun to check out people's answers. So for your quarantine in Nashville, it's you, your family, and you get to add one person to the quarantine. Who are you adding and why?
Family, like immediate family too, like sisters and stuff.
So you got your family. So people have said like a chef because they'd come in and eat. Some people said like a golf instructor because they get their golf game right.
Probably Massage therapist or chiropractor.
That's not bad. Yeah, get the body right.
Between my fiance, her mom, my mom, and my sister, they kind of got cleaning and cooking down.
That's cool.
They got it. They got it. They got it down to a T.
All right. If you couldn't do what you do for a living right now, what would you want to do?
Probably a school teacher, like kindergarten teacher, K through four. K through four, or I would probably get back into comedy.
That's right. Yeah, I did hear recently that you used to do some stand-up. I got to see some of that someday.
I totally got to rearrange my jokes now because of how sensitive people are. If I did stand-up now, that would probably kill my music career.
Right.
Because, you know, that's the cool thing about being a comedian, typically. You can just say whatever.
Right, it was a joke. Like, get over
it. Yeah, and the thing is about comics, we say what people are thinking but are afraid to say.
Right.
You know, we're the honest ones, honestly. You know, comedians are the ones that tell the truth how people really feel but too afraid to say it. So I would definitely do comedy, but I would definitely couldn't tell the jokes I used to tell. Thank goodness there's no footage of that floating around on YouTube.
I know that's the scary thing nowadays too. Nothing you say on the internet ever dies. I know you said you're not a reader, but do you have a favorite book?
The Alchemist, and the one that I think that's just as good as The Alchemist, but might be better, Cat in the Hat.
We've done Cat in the Hat before at the house. Here's one for you. What role does your faith play in your life?
For me, it's one of them things where I'm more of a spiritual person. You know, I don't really get wrapped up in like denominations and stuff. But for me, faith plays a big part because honestly, without it, I wouldn't be where I am. You know, I feel like at some point in people's life, whether they agree with it or not, there comes a point when you realize things that are happening in your life, it's bigger than you, you know? Because, like, how else do I explain working at a gym, right, in the snack bar, meeting this kid that worked in the gym that had my same job, right? Introduced me to a guy that puts me on a show to where I was actually filling in, and then the guy that later became my manager actually was just filling in too, just so happened to get the whole hear my music, I sing, I get a pub deal. And then with the UTA side, you know, they started forming this company to where, same thing with my label, it was like the president, the guy that was head of the label, Zach Katz at the time, was head of BMG, who bought Broken Bow, to where before that, Broken Bow was pretty traditional and stuff, and I don't think the old head would assign me. So it was like two new guys came in. John Loba became the president, right, to where he was signing people, vice president, and then you had Zach Katz came over from the pop world. So it's like John Loba was in a place to where he could believe in something and sign it, and then Zach Katz was coming from the pop world to where my music wasn't too foreign there. So it's so crazy how certain things line up, and to me, like, my faith is the only thing that can really explain that, you know what I mean?
No doubt. Yeah, I read a book one time called God Winks, and those sound, it's like times like that you're like, man, that's a God wink, like God is playing a role in this. And I'm not saying you have to be Catholic, Christian, Jew, whatever it may be, it's like, man, there's a higher power out there. That there's just some things in life that you can't just simply say is coincidental. Next one for you. What's the biggest adversity you faced in your life, and how'd you bounce back from it?
Losing my dad, honestly. Mm. That was tough, man, because it got so ugly between me, my siblings, versus my dad's new wife, to where, you know, most of the time, she really wanted nothing to do with us. You know, I'd call, she'd answer my dad's phone. So I was like, hey, tell my dad to call me back. She'd never do it. Then all of a sudden, once my music took off, then all of a sudden, you know, she's got her hand out, you know? And so my dad, what happened was he was on dialysis. He was doing the liquid dialysis at home. And he got an infection because she wasn't cleaning the tubes right. And he told her to, hey, let the doctor know. So she didn't let the doctor know in time. So 2 weeks later, he got infected. The infection got worse. And then me and her just going back and forth because the plan was to have my dad come to Nashville because the hospitals are better here than the one he was at in Delaware. And she was like, no, your dad's not leaving me. Blah, 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 all this stuff. So I was like, first of all, do you care about my dad at all? I'm telling you, these hospitals in Delaware are ass. You know what I mean? And he can get so much better care here because my dad was going to come. So then that got ugly. And then after he died, had the funerals staff ready, everything ready to go. She got my dad's body cremated the next day so we couldn't have a body. So for me, it was, you know, losing my dad, had a lot of other personal stuff going on that year. That was, man, then from June 2019 to about when he died, and it's, even now, it was probably the hardest part of my life. And what kept me focused was, again, my purpose, my son, my fiance, knew we had a baby girl in the way, and realizing at the same time, whether I want to accept it or not, there's kids from my hometown and all over the place that are looking at me, and kind of what I do and how I react and how I act. So that kind of helped me stay focused. Between that and, you know, just being Black in country music, man, I'm not gonna lie, it's been great, but man, it is a challenge, bro, because the crazy thing is, it's like, I feel like a lot of times with different people, I have to prove how country I am. You know what I mean? It's like a white guy can put on a cowboy hat and some boots. Nobody questions his authenticity. Dude could be from New York City.
Right.
Nobody won't say nothing. But, you know, being a Black guy, you know, I had to prove it. So, like, people actually went to my hometown, like Milton, Delaware, and they get there, they're like, oh, okay, I get it now. You know, and even with music, to where I could release a song that is, you know, not like traditional country, but you can have a white artist put out the same song, nobody questions it. But when I do it, because people still hear with their eyes, you know, it's like, well, maybe it's a little too pop. It's more country than what this artist just put out, and you're playing the heck out of that. But I'm having, you know what I mean? So that's
right.
That's just a daily thing. But people get, and it's not everybody, people get past it. And, what was it one time I was on? I did a thing for CMT, and I had a CMT hoodie on, by the way. CMT hoodie, some jeans, and some sneakers, because I was just chilling. And the lady commented, I do not want that gangster promoted on CMT.
Wow.
I was like, what? She was like,
wow.
He is a gangster. He is a rap artist. I was like, wait, what?
Man, that's crazy.
She was like, he's wearing sneakers. Real country people don't wear sneakers. So I went to her Facebook profile, nothing but Jordans.
That's bad. Yeah, a buddy of mine was playing at a bar down in Nashville recently. His lead guitar player is Black, and they had an incident a few weeks probably 2 months ago now. There was an incident with a bouncer in there and some racism stuff. And it's like, man, they're playing country music in your bar, making you money, like providing for you to have a job there. Like, what in the world? And when you're in an NFL locker room, like, I was the minority for 15 years between college and the NFL. So you get used to it, and it seems so dumb to me. You know what I mean? But it's real, and I appreciate you sharing that, because there's a lot of people that whatever occupation they're in or whatever it may be, you know, when you don't look like everybody else, that's tough. But credit to you, brother, for doing your thing and thriving on the biggest stage in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, man, you got to do what you love, because just as there might be negative people, man, there's so many people out there that are so supportive of not only me, but every other artist that do what they choose to do. You know, and that's really what it's about. You know, I tend to focus on the people that are supportive. I tend to focus on, you know, just family. Because people say, you know, because like me, when I write songs or record a song, I don't record a song because I think people might like it and it's a future number one. I record a song and write a song because I love it. Because for me, it starts with me. Music is what I love. I love what I do. And I feel like at some point, when you're starting to put out music that you don't really love and you're talking about it and stuff like that, people can see through the nonsense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They can see through it, man. So I've just been blessed to be in a situation, be in a position to give back, because I have so many people in my hometown, cousins and friends I went to high school with that are like police officers, teachers, managers at like restaurants and Walmart, and they give back every day, you know? So I was like, how can I give back? So what I started doing 2 years ago was I go to my hometown for 2 days before Christmas and I play a concert, and I'll pay my band, but I won't take money, and all the money raised we give to a local elementary school. PTO. I forgot what it's called. But so last year we were able to raise $20,000 for the elementary school I went to.
Wow.
The year before we raised $20,000 for another school. We're going to go back this year, do it again. And every year, cause I'm like, that's my way of giving back to my community. And I think it's super important to, when you reach a certain level, to not forget where you came from, you know, and the people that help shape you into the person you become, to line you up for the success that you have. And it's been great. Like, I get to speak at my high school's graduation this year. We're doing it virtually, but it's cool, man, to be able to, you know, say to kids from a small town in Milton, Delaware, look, I'm from here too.
you can go be whatever you want to be.
Yep. Like, you saw that movie Just Mercy that just came out with Michael
B. Jordan. I haven't seen that.
So it's Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx, and Michael B. Jordan plays this lawyer that went to, I think it was Harvard, and then he ended up moving to Georgia and becoming a representative for and a defense attorney for guys on death row. Come find out, dude is from Milton, Delaware. Dude went to the same high school as me. You got him, got my cousin Stara. She's from Rehoboth, which is like a couple minutes from, like 20 minutes from Milton. She's like one of the biggest songwriters of pop right now. Like, she wrote Needed Me by Rihanna, Havana, Girls Like You from Maroon 5, Lovers Do from Maroon 5.
Wow.
And the cool thing is, so many people from our small town see that. So that just, you know, continues to inspire the next generation to chase whatever it is you want to chase, whether you're a doctor, lawyer, you know, you want to, like my grandma used to say, even if you want to work at Walmart, nothing wrong with that, but work your butt off and become the best Walmart employee out there. Work, don't just stop at cashier, work to shift manager and run that thing, you know, because that's what my cousin, he's over 4 or 5 different McDonald's, and he's only 28, and he started working at McDonald's as a cashier when he was 16. You know, so it's all about finding what you love and giving it everything you have, no matter how society might say that's not a cool job or that's not a cool job. Nah, man. At the end of the day, we all out here working hard, trying to provide for our family. And like I say on stage every night, there's no difference between the person you see on stage and the people that stay after and clean it up.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I always bring this up with guys that play in the league that start taking themselves too serious. I'm like, guys, we play a game with a ball for a living. What are you doing to impact others and use this platform? Because ultimately, you're just an entertainer. You're no better than anybody else. So you don't need to treat the people that work on our plane different, or the people that clean up after us, like, you need to treat them with respect. Like, go clean up your own plate and do those types of things. And I think your words that you just shared are just so incredibly inspiring and will hit so many people. And what you said, no matter what you're doing, be the best at it. And you know what? Your cousin who's managing the McDonald's, he's going to make an impact on so many people in his life, you know, managing all those people. He has an opportunity to pour into so many people doing that and impacting others. You said you like to quote people that are dead. And I've been using this Jackie Robinson quote lately to just kind of fulfill me. And it's like a life is not lived other than the impact that you've had on others. Like that's what life is about. And that's using your platform. That's your significance, not that you sing or I play pro football. It's are you impacting others? And that's where anybody can do it. We got a few quick questions left. And these are rapid fire. These are fun ones. And then we'll wrap it up. I got Bill's schedule release coming out tonight. So I got to hop on with the Bills people, here in a few, but what's your favorite restaurant? I know you said you like diners. What's your favorite restaurant?
In Nashville.
Yeah. Nashville.
St. Anejo's, but my favorite place. I love that place. But
killer tacos.
In all the world to eat. It's this gas station in Milton, Delaware called Quick Stop.
Oh, I love it.
Bro, their food there. Oh, man.
That's great.
The sandwiches, scrapple egg and cheese sandwiches, so good.
What was your first car?
A Chevy Malibu.
What was your first job?
I was a cart boy at Food Lion.
Nice. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
Probably between Darius Rucker, Keith Urban, Tim McGraw, Brad Paisley.
Those are some big dogs.
Who else I got in my phone?
You got Garth?
Garth? Yeah, Garth's in my phone.
He might be the biggest.
Who else? Do emails count?
We'll count it. That's the first time I've been asked that, but yeah, we'll count it.
If emails count, I would say Will Smith.
Wow.
No, Shaq.
We hit our 1 hour time limit, and the only recurring question we didn't get to was, what's your favorite movie? So we'll have to get that from Jimmy next time. Thanks for tuning into this episode, and I hope the content of this podcast impacts and inspires you in your life. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. That goes a long way to ensuring that I continue to produce these podcasts. I knew I had to get close to you. Girl, what's your name? What you drinking? Yeah, what's your favorite song?